application-oriented college English course.
应用型大学英语综合教程练习册第三册，由上海交通大学电子音像出版社录制出版。
Unit 1, Part 2, Development of 4R Skills, Listening, Section A, Listening Comprehension.
Task 1. Now listen to a news item and answer question 1.
To a hushed throng of reporters, Peter England, the permanent secretary of the Swedish Academy, made the announcement.The Nobel Prize in Literature for 2009 is awarded to the German author Herta Müller, who with the concentration of poetry and the frankness of prose depicts the landscape of the dispossessed. As a member of Romania's ethnic German minority, Müller knew persecution under the rule of Ceausescu's regime. Her work, which was censored by the then communist government in Romania, was smuggled into Germany,where it received rave reviews. The 56-year-old writer is said to be overjoyed with winning the prize. Some say the award this year also represents a nod to the 20th anniversary of communism's collapse in Europe. Müller is the third European in a row to win the prize and the 10th German to take it. She is also the 12th woman to capture the top literature award.The writer also collects a prize of $1.4 million from the Nobel Committee.
Now listen to the item again and answer question 2.
To a hushed throng of reporters, Peter England, the permanent secretary of the Swedish Academy, made the announcement. The Nobel Prize in Literature for 2009 is awarded to the German author Herta Müller, who with the concentration of poetryand the frankness of prose depicts the landscape of the dispossessed. As a member of Romania's ethnic German minority, Müller knew persecution under the rule of Ceausescu's regime. Her work, which was censored by the then communist government in Romania, was smuggled into Germany, where it received rave reviews. The 56-year-old writer is said to be overjoyed with winning the prize.Some say the award this year also represents a nod to the 20th anniversary of communism's collapse in Europe. Müller is the third European in a row to win the prize and the 10th German to take it. She is also the 12th woman to capture the top literature award. The writer also collects a prize of $1.4 million from the Nobel Committee. Task 2.Now listen to a news item and answer question 3.
Speaking to reporters in Canberra, Nuri al-Maliki said, Two recent major bomb attacks in Baghdad were regrettable after a period of calm. Despite the violence and loss of life, the Iraqi leader insists that extremists in Iraq have lost their ability to challenge and confront local security forces.With the United States intent on pulling its troops out of the troubled country, Mr. al-Maliki says Iraqi authorities will be able to cope after the withdrawal. Australia, a key U.S. ally in the invasion that forced Saddam Hussein from power in 2003, pulled its combat forces out of Iraq in the middle of last year, fulfilling an election pledge by the incoming government of Labour Prime Minister Kevin Rudd.Australian troops still remain in Baghdad to guard diplomats, and a Navy frigate protects Iraqi oil wells. Trade between Australia and Iraq has been another dominant theme during Mr. al-Maliki's five-day visit.
Now listen to the item again and answer question 4.
Speaking to reporters in Canberra, Nuri al-Maliki said,Two recent major bomb attacks in Baghdad were regrettable after a period of calm. Despite the violence and loss of life, the Iraqi leader insists that extremists in Iraq have lost their ability to challenge and confront local security forces. With the United States intent on pulling its troops out of the troubled country, Mr. Al-Maliki says Iraqi authorities will be able to cope after the withdrawal. Australia, a key U.S. ally in the invasion that forced Saddam Hussein from power in 2003, pulled its combat forces out of Iraq in the middle of last year, fulfilling an election pledge by the incoming government of Labour Prime Minister Kevin Rudd. Australian troops still remain in Baghdad to guard diplomats, and a Navy frigate protects Iraqi oil wells. Trade between Australia and Iraq has been another dominant theme during Mr. Al-Maliki's 5-day visit. Task 3. Now listen to a news item and answer question 5.
Ambulances had trouble getting through the traffic jams in Padang. With the electricity out, the traffic lights were not working. Police had closed off some streets where rescue workers were digging through the rubble, and crowds of bystanders spilled out onto the streets to watch. In front of a collapsed storefront where the father, mother, and 2-year-old sister of Kendi Pratama now lay buried. Friends and neighbors are flagging down cars and asking for donations to help the remaining family members. Pratama finds it difficult to speak. He says he feels sorry today and cannot think straight. Many houses and offices in Padang suffered only structural damage, but many large buildings like car dealer shops, hospitals, hotels, mosques and churches were completely destroyed. A local middle school is now just a pile of rubble. More than 60 students died when the school crashed down upon them.
Now listen to the item again and answer question 6.
Ambulances had trouble getting through the traffic jams in Padang. With the electricity out, the traffic lights were not working. Police had closed off some streets where rescue workers were digging through the rubble, and crowds of bystanders spilled out onto the streets to watch. In front of a collapsed storefront where the father, mother, and 2-year-old sister of Kendi Pratama now lay buried. Friends and neighbors are flagging down cars and asking for donations to help the remaining family members. Pratama finds it difficult to speak. He says he feels sorry today and cannot think straight. Many houses and offices in Padang suffered only structural damage, but many large buildings like car dealer shops, hospitals, hotels, mosques and churches were completely destroyed. A local middle school is now just a pile of rubble. More than 60 students died when the school crashed down upon them.
Task 4. Now listen to a long conversation and answer questions 7 to 8.
Mrs. Sutta, is there a need to control population only in countries like India, Africa, Brazil, those countries that we call the underdeveloped countries? Or is there a case for limiting population in Europe, for instance?
The reason why we have to limit the population is because you're running out of food and you're running out of resources. The people in Europe and America consume a far greater proportion of the world's resources and food than they do in India. So population is directly related to consumption and your general impact on the environment.
Do you mean that if, as an individual, your individual impact is far greater than anybody else, and that is the factor that is important, rather than how many people there are, or how many people can the world support?
Exactly. Now, obviously, in that case, it is possible to increase population if everybody is willing to use less material or eat less food. But this doesn't seem to be the trend at the moment.
But the world can produce more to meet the needs.
The problem is that the underdeveloped areas try and develop more material benefits. But as soon as they do this, the population increase has wiped out any benefits they have achieved.
But do you think this battle with the rapidly expanding population can be won?
The most sensible thing is to realize that you can't go on expanding human populations forever, and countries and individuals must decide to have a policy which will limit population.
What section of the population do you think free birth control techniques should be available to?
They should be available to all sections of the community, since things are getting to such a pitch that I personally think that not only should birth control methods be available to all sections of the community, but indeed should be compulsory. There should be some kind of law which says that a family should not have more than 3 children, a complete maximum of 3 children. If they have 3 children, they must be obliged to the law to use birth control.
But surely this is very explosive in social terms.
It is a very totalitarian notion, but if we look around us in the world, we can see millions of people are starving to death in places like India, and people suffering from malnutrition in other parts of the underdeveloped world, and indeed even in parts of the so-called developed world.
Now listen to the conversation again and answer questions 9 to 12. Mrs. Sutta, is there a need to control population only in countries like India, Africa, Brazil, those countries that we call the underdeveloped countries? Or is there a case for limiting population in Europe, for instance?
The reason why we have to limit the population is because you're running out of food and you're running out of resources. The people in Europe and America consume a far greater proportion of the world's resources and food than they do in India. So population is directly related to consumption and your general impact on the environment.
Do you mean that if, as an individual, your individual impact is far greater than anybody else, and that is the factor that is important, rather than how many people there are, or how many people can the world support?
Exactly. Now, obviously, in that case, it is possible to increase population if everybody is willing to use less material or eat less food. But this doesn't seem to be the trend at the moment.
But the world can produce more to meet the needs.
The problem is that the underdeveloped areas try and develop more material benefits, but as soon as they do this, the population increase has wiped out any benefits they have achieved.
But do you think this battle with the rapidly expanding population can be won?
The most sensible thing is to realize that you can't go on expanding human populations forever, and countries and individuals must decide to have a policy which will limit population.
What section of the population do you think free birth control techniques should be available to?
They should be available to all sections of the community, since things are getting to such a pitch that I personally think that not only should birth control methods be available to all sections of the community, but indeed should be compulsory. There should be some kind of law which says that a family should not have more than 3 children, a complete maximum of 3 children. If they have 3 children, they must be obliged to the law to use birth control.
But surely this is very explosive in social terms.
It is a very totalitarian notion, but if we look around us in the world, we can see millions of people are starving to death in places like India, and people suffering from malnutrition in other parts of the underdeveloped world, and indeed, even in parts of the so-called developed world.
Task 5. Now listen to a short passage or a long conversation and answer questions 13 to 14.
The University of Cambridge is a place, a community, and an institution. It is also a pervasive presence in the world. The Cambridge University community is preponderantly British. 75% of our academic staff are British, 85% of our undergraduates, and almost 50% of our postgraduates. Collegiate Cambridge remains deeply committed to the education of outstanding British students. Cambridge is among the most beautiful universities in the world, and experiencing that beauty is part of what it means to be at Cambridge. We are an integral part of a lively and interesting city. There was a time in the 1950s and 60s when things looked different, and the university was too dominant in the local economy for anyone's health. That changed happily. The vitality of Greater Cambridge today depends on a mix of long-established businesses, startups, private and public sector research labs, not-for-profit organizations, the staff and students of two universities, one regional college, a major teaching hospital, and a wide array of schools. In historical terms, this virtuous circle is recent and fragile, and success poses new problems, particularly with housing and transportation. Is there more we could and should be doing as an institution to take Cambridge to the world, to make the distant fan feel closer? Web-based technologies give us a new realm of possibilities for teaching, learning, and access. In a flash, access of a kind is simultaneously local, national, and global. Universities are expected to have attractive, navigable websites for prospective students, and most do. We do. But that is not enough now. With skill and determination, we can use new modes of communication to attract the attention of bright, inquiring students, whatever their background and wherever they may be, and make Cambridge much more accessible. There are three spheres where I believe action will serve Cambridge well in an increasingly interconnected world. First, we must assert our own unique identity with confidence and invest in it. Second, we must keep energetically engaged in the future of this place, which is our place, even as we look to the horizon. Third, we must step up our exploration of ways to bring Cambridge to the world. When the founders of Cambridge arrived in the Fen country, it was remote from government control, a distant region of wetness, cold, goblins, and contagion. The university was part of that place then, as it is part of this place now. It will always be so. One of the greatest challenges for collegiate Cambridge in the next few years will be to strike the right balance in our attentions, to nurture this fen while working to ensure that it is distant no more.
Now listen to the passage or conversation again and answer questions 15 to 18.
The University of Cambridge is a place, a community, and an institution. It is also a pervasive presence in the world. The Cambridge University community is preponderantly British. 75% of our academic staff are British, 85% of our undergraduates, and almost 50% of our postgraduates. Collegiate Cambridge remains deeply committed to the education of outstanding British students. Cambridge is among the most beautiful universities in the world, and experiencing that beauty is part of what it means to be at Cambridge. We are an integral part of a lively and interesting city. There was a time in the 1950s and 60s when things looked different, and the university was too dominant in the local economy for anyone's health. That changed happily. The vitality of Greater Cambridge today depends on a mix of long-established businesses, startups, private and public sector research labs, not-for-profit organizations, the staff and students of two universities, one regional college, a major teaching hospital, and a wide array of schools. In historical terms, this virtuous circle is recent and fragile, and success poses new problems, particularly with housing and transportation. Is there more we could and should be doing as an institution to take Cambridge to the world, to make the distant fan feel closer? Web-based technologies give us a new realm of possibilities for teaching, learning, and access. In a flash, access of a kind is simultaneously local, national, and global. Universities are expected to have attractive, navigable websites for prospective students, and most do. We do. But that is not enough now. With skill and determination, we can use new modes of communication to attract the attention of bright, inquiring students, whatever their background and wherever they may be, and make Cambridge much more accessible. There are three spheres where I believe action will serve Cambridge well in an increasingly interconnected world. First, we must assert our own unique identity with confidence and invest in it. Second, we must keep energetically engaged in the future of this place, which is our place, even as we look to the horizon. Third, we must step up our exploration of ways to bring Cambridge to the world. When the founders of Cambridge arrived in the Fen country, it was remote from government control, a distant region of wetness, cold, goblins, and contagion. The university was part of that place then, as it is part of this place now. It will always be so. One of the greatest challenges for collegiate Cambridge in the next few years will be to strike the right balance in our attentions, to nurture this fen while working to ensure that it is distant no more.
Section B, Listening-Based Integrated Tasks.
So, is that it, Mr. Gaines? You have one formal teacher for upwards of 300 students? Mr. Gaines, answer the question.
Nah, I'm not going to answer your question, because you guys have already made up your minds. I'm an expert in rejection, and I can see it on your faces. And it's too bad that you judge us by the way we look and not by who we are. Just because you want us to be more like them when the truth is we're not like them. And I am damn proud of that fact. I mean, Harmon College and their 100 years of tradition. But tradition of what? Of hazing kids and humiliating anyone who's a little bit different? Of putting so much pressure on kids that they turn into these stress freaks and caffeine addicts? Your phony school demeans real colleges everywhere. Why? Why can we both exist, huh? You can have your grades and your rules and your structure and your ivory towers, and then we'll do things our way. Why do we have to conform to what you want? Your curriculum is a joke, and you, sir, are a criminal. You know what? You're a criminal, because you robbed these kids of their creativity and their passion. That's the real crime. Well, what about you, parents? Did the system really work out for you? Did it teach you to follow your heart, or just to play it safe, roll over? What about you guys? Did you always want to be school administrators? Dr. Alexander, was that your dream? Or maybe no. Maybe you wanted to be a poet. Maybe you wanted to be a magician or an artist. Maybe you just wanted to travel the world. Look, I lied to you. I lied to all of you, and I'm sorry, Dad, especially to you. But out of that desperation, something happened that was so amazing. Life was full of possibilities. And isn't that what you ultimately want for us? As parents, I mean? Well, we came here today to ask for your approval, and something just occurred to me. I don't give a shit. Who cares about your approval? We don't need your approval to tell us that what we did was real, because there are so few truths in this world that when you see one, you know it. And I know that it is a truth that real learning took place at South Harmon. Whether you like it or not, it did. Because you don't need teachers or classrooms or fancy highbrow traditions or money to really learn. You just need people with the desire to better themselves. And we got that by the shitload at South Harmon. So you can go ahead, sign your forms, reject us and shoot us down, and do whatever you gotta do. It doesn't really matter at this point. Because we'll never stop learning, and we'll never stop growing. And we'll never forget the ideals that were instilled in us at our place. Because we are SHIT heads now, and we'll be SHIT heads forever, and nothing you say or do or stamp can take that away from us. So go. Go ahead.
Everyone, please quiet down. Everyone, please quiet down. Quiet down, please. Thank you. Mr. Gaines, your presentation was unorthodox, to say the least, and your methodology is questionable at best. However, the true purpose of education is to stimulate the creativity and the passions of the student body. And in that regard, you have certainly succeeded. This board does not reject innovation, but it must be watched carefully. Therefore, the South Harmon Institute of Technology will be granted a one-year probationary period in which to continue its experimental programs. Don't be so quick to judge us by the way we look. Congratulations! So, is that it, Mr. Gaines? You have one formal teacher for upwards of 300 students? Mr. Gaines, answer the question.
No, I'm not going to answer your question, because you guys have already made up your minds. I'm an expert in rejection, and I can see it on your faces. And it's too bad that you judge us by the way we look and not by who we are. Just because you want us to be more like them when the truth is we're not like them. And I am damn proud of that fact. I mean, Harmon College and their 100 years of tradition. But tradition of what? Of hazing kids and humiliating anyone who's a little bit different? Of putting so much pressure on kids that they turn into these stress freaks and caffeine addicts? Your phony school demeans real colleges everywhere. Why? Why can we both exist, huh? You can have your grades and your rules and your structure and your ivory towers, and then we'll do things our way. Why do we have to conform to what you want? Your curriculum is a joke, and you, sir, are a criminal. You know what? You're a criminal, because you rob these kids of their creativity and their passion. That's the real crime. Well, what about you, parents? Did the system really work out for you? Did it teach you to follow your heart, or just to play it safe, roll over? What about you guys? Did you always want to be school administrators? Dr. Alexander, was that your dream? Or maybe no. Maybe you wanted to be a poet. Maybe you wanted to be a magician or an artist. Maybe you just wanted to travel the world. Look, I lied to all of you, and I'm sorry, Dad, especially to you. But out of that desperation, something happened that was so amazing. Life was full of possibilities. And isn't that what you ultimately want for us? As parents, I mean? Well, we came here today to ask for your approval, and something just occurred to me. I don't give a shit. Who cares about your approval? We don't need your approval to tell us that what we did was real, because there are so few truths in this world that when you see one, you know it. And I know that it is a truth that real learning took place at South Harmon. Whether you like it or not, it did. Because you don't need teachers or classrooms or fancy highbrow traditions or money to really learn. You just need people with the desire to better themselves. And we got that by the shitload at South Harmon. So you can go ahead, sign your forms, reject us and shoot us down, and do whatever you gotta do. It doesn't really matter at this point. Because we'll never stop learning, and we'll never stop growing. And we'll never forget the ideals that were instilled in us at our place. Because we are SHIT heads now, and we'll be SHIT heads forever, and nothing you say or do or stamp can take that away from us. So go. Go ahead.
Everyone, please quiet down. Everyone, please quiet down. Quiet down, please. Thank you. Mr. Gaines, your presentation was unorthodox, to say the least, and your methodology is questionable at best. However, the true purpose of education is to stimulate the creativity and the passions of the student body. And in that regard, you have certainly succeeded. This board does not reject innovation, but it must be watched carefully. Therefore, the South Harmon Institute of Technology will be granted a one-year probationary period in which to continue its experimental programs. Don't be so quick to judge us by the way we look. Congratulations!